On today's edition of the College Football Inquirer, Texas A&M finally wins the game that Texas A&M never, ever wins. What does it mean for the Aggies? And also, what does it mean for Notre Dame now that they are possibly the nation's best 0-2 team? Also, Brian Kelly goes off in the postgame press conference after Florida. We talk about that and expectations and how to order your questions in a press conference. Very important information. Also, DJ Lagway had one of the worst games a quarterback has ever had. What does that mean for him? What does it mean for Billy Napier at Florida? We will also take you around the rest of the country. Incredible action all day Saturday. We will recap it here on the College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer. I want to remind you, if you want to see me, you want to see Godfrey, his lovely Phantom Island background.
Oh,
he has
his
other show too. He cheats on us with that show. And then Ross, you can always see Ross's various beautiful hotel rooms. This one is somewhere in maybe Mishawaka, Indiana, maybe Michigan
Close.
City, Indiana. I'm not sure.
Close. I'm an Elkhart, Andy. I'm an
Elkhart.
Yes, Elkhart. I'm in the lovely 4 Points Sheraton in Elkhart. Where right behind me, as you can see, is my hotel door. Last night at 2:30 in the morning, guys, I was just in my underwear, like my bottoms. That's it. My special parts were covered, Andy. That's all. And Texas A&M fans.
Wait, throw that at
drunk,
me like I'm
bustling,
like, wait,
really
were
painting.
Were you covered up?
Really painting a picture.
Two Texas A&M fans busted into my room 2:30 in the morning. Don't know how they got the key of the room. No idea. They had a few celebratory booze, I could tell. I slowly backed them out of the room, and they did. They agreed to leave my room.
Okay, question. Two dudes. Guy and a lady.
Two dudes, and they had like luggage.
It's A&M, of course.
Like they were
dudes.
Checking in at 2:30 in the morning. Nice,
of course,
guys.
It was two
nice.
Dudes.
And then my key didn't work this morning, so something happened with like the room and whatever. I don't know, but that was interesting. I don't think in all my time traveling and all the hotels I stay in, that has never happened.
I like that they were checking in. That's my favorite detail, Ross. That they whatever occurred in their day, they're like, we'll just get the hotel afterwards.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I like
that. And I mean, we got to talk about it because this was a massive celebration for Texas A&M fans in South Bend because they don't ever win these games. This is the kind of game where the football gods just reach into the chest of every Aggie, rip out their heart, throw it on the ground, stomp on it several times until it stops wiggling around. But that didn't happen. That didn't happen. In fact, touchdown Jesus, I don't know what he was up to. He's not extra point Jesus, clearly. He's touchdown Jesus because Tyler Buchner, a name I never thought I would say again outside of a lacrosse context, figured prominently in a college football game. Notre Dame scores toward the end of the game to go up 6 points. They should have gone up 7 points. They should have gone up 41-34 instead
usually,
of 40-30.
You know, yeah, usually.
Yeah. I'm sure there were certain people who got Texas A&M plus 6.5 early in the week. I'm sure they were pretty thrilled with the missed extra point, but not really worrying about what it meant for Texas A&M. But all the Aggies just pins and needles because if Marcel Reed could get them down the field again, and he had been getting them down the field all night, it was going to be a chip shot extra point to win the game. And turned out, you're in the red zone, fourth and goal. What are you going to do? Marcel Reed throws a touchdown pass to win the game. Guys, I was just blown away. Ross, you were there. What was the atmosphere like after the extra point miss on that last drive?
Yeah, it was like incredibly deflating in the stadium, right? There was this huge roar, 12-yard touchdown run from Jeremiah Love, who played incredible all night. They obviously force-fed him the ball after what happened in game one at Miami.
It's amazing what happens when you give him the ball.
Yeah, when you give the Heisman, potential Heisman winner the ball, yes. And so it was this huge, like, burst of celebration from the stadium. There were only 2 minutes and like 53 seconds left, I think, in the game. And then the missed extra point just deflated sort of the whole building, except the 20-25% obviously wearing maroon. And Tyler Buchner, I mean, the snap hit him right in the hands. You know, I mean, it was like just bounced right off of his hands. And as that happened, somebody, I won't say who in the press box who was sort of near me, said, oh, they're going to lose by one now. And because you knew how the
game
was going.
It's okay. Pete Sampson, I'm sure, said it.
No, not Pete. They couldn't stay. They couldn't stop A&M the whole game. Notre Dame couldn't stop A&M. Marcus Freeman talked about that afterward. Don't just point to the extra point. It's more people's fault than this. We just didn't play well enough at all. And that was the thing I took. I took two big things away from this game. For me,
yes.
One, wow, A&M has incredible speed on the perimeter on the outside, especially with Mario Craver, the former Mississippi State, the Mississippi State transfer that came in, caught seven catches, 207 yards. They just got a lot of speed on the outside and the perimeter. And the other thing I took away from it is whether this is because Notre Dame has speed on the perimeter or whether it's Notre Dame's defense just isn't up to the standard, but everybody was open. Every play for Texas A&M against Notre Dame's defense. I mean, it was like, it was wild.
And yeah, that was the most shocking thing, I think, was Notre Dame's defense being as porous as it was. Actually, well, Texas A&M's defense being as porous as it was probably a close second.
Yeah.
Because you don't expect that from Texas A&M, especially with Mike Elko coaching them.
Two defensive coaches,
guys,
right?
Could it be that these offenses are really good? Because The thing that I was watching as I was watching A&M do this, and Mario Craver, who they got from Mississippi State, Casey Concepcion, who they got from NC State, worth every penny. Like, we've been waiting to see this from a Texas A&M team since Mike Evans left. It's Mike Evans and Ryan Swope. Like, it's been a long time since Texas A&M had receivers that truly scared you. And these guys should scare you. Looking around the rest of the SEC so far this season, I hadn't seen a real dominant defense yet. I think A&M may run up some points on some people.
This was not a bad offense last year. They were about 30 points a game, but they were noticeably incomplete, especially down the stretch. And this is, once again, I complimented Mike Elko twice last week on how calm and adult in the room he's been about sort of arresting the team culture. This was a talented locker room under Jimbo Fisher. It was not cohesive. Last year felt like, okay, let's do all the non on-field stuff, and then let's go out and complete a better roster. Let's go out and work better in the portal and be smarter in recruiting. They've done exactly that. Colin Klein, great game. Reed, great game. Honestly, better than anything I saw last year, especially as Andy, you mentioned, in the big game moments. I think I was forced to on another show do a playoff 12, and I had A&M as sort of the fun call of the last team in. I feel really good about that right now. On the other side, this is the best 0-2 team in the country, right? And for being, hey, for a freshman quarterback, CJ Carr, mistakes, yes. Working his butt off, guys. Like, not a poor decision to go with him, but this is not last year's team. And yet they're small losses. And I'm trying to find an upside here for Notre Dame. I think the bigger concern now is they don't really have a resume point with the way that their schedule's structured. Winning out is still possible. Yeah, we can do that. I don't want to reduce every game and every conversation to the playoff. But Notre Dame, I kind of feel like you have to after week three.
And especially now. So this is the downside of independence. The downside of independence is, other than your ACC scheduling agreement where they're going to give you five teams every year,
which is a choice.
Like, and you get USC later in the season, not as late as when you play at USC, but we get them late. But they don't want to play later in the season anymore. Like, they want to play in September now that they're in the Big Ten. So this is what Notre Dame is going to have to deal with in this era, unless something changes. You're going to front load this thing, and you have to win some of these games. Now, they can win 10 in a row, which they did last year. They won 10 in a row last year. They need USC to be awesome. They need NC State to be awesome. They need Arkansas to be awesome. But they also simultaneously need to be able to beat them. And there's the rub.
Yeah, we talked about this, didn't we, last week? Like, we started playing the hypotheticals, right? What if Notre Dame loses this game? And I think I wrote it like in my story after the game, but a 10-2 Notre Dame, if maybe one of the two, Miami or A&M, are pretty good, right, and make the playoff, we'll probably get in the playoff. Like, that's just what my thoughts are. You know, they don't have.
They were in the game with both teams. You know. They, you know,
what, yeah, 4 points.
Four
guys. Points.
They got 4 points.
It's four points, fourth quarter. Points, right. You held serve. There's not a lot of shame here. We're not rebuilding.
But that's the thing. People hate the quality loss argument. Like, maybe it's different because it's not an SEC team. But
maybe
people bristle at the idea of a quality loss.
Yeah,
it's not that. It's not that you get credit for losing that game over somebody else winning another game. It is when it's a tiebreaker situation.
Yeah.
People are going to look at how'd you play against playoff contenders or playoff teams. And if you got blown out by the playoff teams and the other team that you're kind of tied with played them into the fourth quarter and lost on a dropped extra point snap, well, guess what? They're going to get credit for that.
Dropped extra point stamp on Thursday in a bad hold. Did you guys see the hold on the fourth and goal? It was not even a hold. Yeah. It was a tackle.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I've never seen an offensive lineman with his arms wrapped around the defensive lineman's leg like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm watching the replay. I'm like, I get that holds get missed every play, but how do you miss that one?
Yeah.
The team I've seen the last two games, I think, can win the next four. Purdue, Arkansas, Boise, and North Carolina State, all noticeably flawed in different reasons.
CJ Bailey is going to carve them up if they play like they did last night on defense, though.
But defensively, when we're still in small sample set season, which is basically like what, until the second week of October, I'm not sure how to react to that side of the ball last night, Andy. I don't know if it's just gross inefficiency or we're having a schematic issue or if we're just coaching up some young guys.
Also, Benjamin Morrison went out at one point with an injury. Like, that's another scary thing. So you're struggling to defend these receivers anyway, and your best corner goes down. I'm sorry, yeah. Leonard Moore. Leonard Moore, who replaced Benjamin Morrison last year when he got hurt.
Yeah.
Now, Andy,
I can't remember if it was PI or hold. I think it was a defensive hold. Was on arguably their other best defensive back in Christian Gray late in the game that extended a drive.
Yes, I saw lots of angry Notre Dame fans cursing his name as well as Tyler Buckner's name.
Yeah, everybody was open. It was unbelievable. I kind of talked to some staff members at A&M Saturday morning and Friday night too, and they were like, of course, right? They were like, we're going to win by two touchdowns. We've got too much speed. And we did. We saw the speed. It was pretty incredible. And if not for maybe the block punt and in a play here or there, maybe they do win by more than just 1 point. But the speed was definitely there. They were right about that.
One thing that, Andy, you talked about this on Thursday, the way USC looks on offense right now, we could probably wrap up the 2025 Notre Dame conversation because that's going to be their next like tier quality opponent for a resume point. Right now, it feels impossible to see this Irish team winning this game.
Well, that's the question. And also, be careful because USC also has 360-pound defensive tackles who can
take
interceptions back 70 yards.
With light
Jamal
hands.
Jarrett, shout out. Man, he was rumbling.
With beautiful light hands.
Well, I want to go back to A&M for a second, and then we got to move to another game in the 40s involving SEC teams. But Texas A&M needed a win like this program-wide. Like, they needed to win one of these games. It always felt like they never won one of these, where everything was out in front of them. You know, you go back in the Sumlin era and they'd start 5-0, and the first time they played a really good team, they get their doors blown off. This is what you were waiting for. This is what you were waiting for. And so now they have to capitalize on it. Like, they play Auburn in 2 weeks. If Auburn comes into to Kyle Field and beats them, you lose some of this. But
yes.
But this is a great resume point for them because Notre Dame is going to finish like 9-3 or 10-2.
Yeah.
I think
maybe 8-4.
But yeah, they're going to wind up with a decent record. It's going to look like a good win.
Yes.
So now just stack a couple more of these. And it really comes down to, can you go 10-2? Can you go 10-2, make the playoff? Now, if you go 10-2, there's still a good chance. Like, remember, A&M with three losses was playing for a spot in the SEC championship game in the final game of the regular season last year. So they've kind of been through this a little bit.
The interesting thing, Andy, is like if we, and I hate, like Godfrey said, to reduce everything to the playoff, but that this is where we are right now with a 12-team playoff, is that, you know, when it comes down to it, there's a pretty high likelihood chance that if Notre Dame does go like 10-2, that they are competing for a playoff spot with Miami,
with A&M.
Texas A&M. Yeah. They could potentially be, right, they all could be like 10-2 or 9-3.
And you're going to give it to the team that won the game.
Yeah, you should.
But that's a beautiful example, if it happens, of the system working the way it should. That's what we want. That's why we're aggressive in the scheduling, right? Real quick, I would ask anybody listening who's an Irish fan, about this time, roughly, today's the 14th, they were going into their third game last season on September 14th. Would you rather, I'm serious, because I'm seeing columns now, the defense has imploded, like you've had personnel turnover, okay? And no, they're not as good a defense as they were last year. Quarterbacks changed, obviously. You're going to suffer a little bit for that. But would you rather these losses combine 4 points against two teams that look to be playoff caliber, or would you rather be sitting at 1-1 with a 10-point home win over a worse A&M team and the loss to NIU? Where is the I'm serious. Pick your crisis.
Good
here.
Question.
No, it probably was worse this time last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they still wound up in the national title game. So
yeah, hindsight, Andy. Yeah. Hindsight is that defense got dominant and better and the personnel was better fit. We just didn't, it just wasn't placed correctly yet. And I don't know. They're just younger this year.
I'm also not out on the idea that Texas A&M's offense is just very good.
They're really good.
Because
we
did see Notre Dame limit Miami, which if you saw them against USF.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Miami's pretty complete. And so it may be that A&M is better than we thought, which brings me to the discussion of the SEC in general and two teams that I think could be competitive in the SEC race that played one another yesterday, that played a game in the 40s. Georgia-Tennessee. Tennessee takes a huge lead. Georgia comes back, takes control. Tennessee retakes control. Gunnar Stockton throws a dime on 4th-and-7. Touchdown to London Humphreys. Mm-hmm. Tennessee misses a field goal with a chance to win it in regulation. They go to overtime. The kicker makes essentially the same field goal, but then Georgia scores a touchdown. And so Georgia is not Death Star Georgia. Can we all agree on that?
No, they're tier one. They're a tier one SEC team, but I think they also just beat a tier one SEC team.
Bingo. Mm. Yes. Yeah. Tennessee's good, guys. Tennessee is good. They won the Joey Aguilar, Nico Iamaleava trade, and we're going to put Joey's name first now because they won the trade. Yeah.
that's your reward.
UCLA got destroyed by New Mexico on Friday night. I watched most of it.
Did you watch?
Wow,
yes, did you? Sir. Good for you.
Yeah, they didn't win
the
turquoise.
Worst power conference team by far, right?
I mean, yes.
Holy
moly. Yeah.
They play Northwestern.
Northwestern.
They play Northwestern
only,
in 2 weeks
for
the right to be called that.
Let's see what the Big 12 coughs up at the bottom too. Yet they've got a strong lead, Ross. Tennessee. Quarterback situation great. Took advantage of what I thought were incredibly bad either decisions or lapses or a little bit of both with the Georgia secondary. Like Aguilar, let's give him his flowers, and we're going to include him on a group of quarterbacks that are sort of playing better than our Heisman names are. But Georgia came out in that game defensively, and they made some decisions. But here's how you should frame this for Tennessee. You took advantage of those decisions, of those poor decisions.
Well, here's where I'll push back on this. So it wasn't poor decisions.
Okay.
It was Kirby saying, if I sit back in zone and don't get pressure on this kid, he's going to pick me apart. Which is probably
and he
right.
Beat you in man.
So he tells his corners, you got to cut.
Yeah.
But Aguilar,
they beat him, which Nico would never do.
Aguilar will just throw it against the one-on-one matchup and say my receiver can make a play. And that Chris Brazel play, that's letting a receiver make a play. He did it with Mike Matthews last week. Nobody was watching because it was East Tennessee State. But he understands if you have a one-on-one, just throw it up. It's to the receiver's advantage almost every time.
Okay. You know what? Just for the sake of the team that lost, I like giving them credit there versus it looked silly at times because of how efficient he was. But again, if he is a more complete quarterback than we ever really thought, and there's a lot of this going around, I keep teasing to it. There's a lot of guys who are just playing extremely well on good teams right now who are not elite by recruiting standards. Let's talk about
the quarterback on the other side of that game, Gunnar Stockton, because
he's on this list now.
He was the guy all the Georgia fans were afraid for going into the game because they were saying, all right, I don't know if he's the guy. I don't know how he'll do in crunch time.
Yeah.
I thought Gunnar Stockton acquitted himself incredibly well in the high pressure moments.
I joked around about like, okay, what's the personnel issue going into game week? It was Tennessee was down, what, two starting quarters?
Yes. Right? And that's the other thing for Tennessee you should take away is, if they play this game again at a neutral site, say, I don't know, Mercedes-Benz Stadium or some playoff venue,
you probably have
Jermon McCoy back. Like,
yes.
You've got both your corners back. Like, it may be different.
I felt it fair and, you know, a little bit funny to say, what are we going to do? We're going to have Gunnar Stockton's going to win this game by beating us deep. Gunnar Stockton with deep ball touch. Hey, guess what happened? Whew. Oh, boy, had deep ball touch.
That throw to London Humphreys was as perfect as you can throw it.
Yeah, it was unbelievable, especially for the moment. It was just about as good as you can get as a quarterback in that moment, in that pressure moment, on the road, fourth down, game on the line, and he just put it on a dime. I mean, incredible.
I mean, all right. That's one of those. Okay. Humphreys didn't even have to turn around. It just fell into his hands.
So we're in a win-win divorce, and the kids are actually happier and don't know it yet with Carson Beck leaving for Miami. I mean,
the thing about it, so good. I thought you were talking about the Georgia-Tennessee game was a win-win divorce. When the couple gets back together for that one-night fling in maybe early December, it could be explosive. So... Let's widen out a little bit.
Okay.
After watching Georgia and Tennessee, after watching Texas A&M, after watching Florida and LSU, after watching Texas and UTEP, what do we know about the SEC?
I think we have tiers. Here's my pitch. Y'all tell me.
Okay.
And this is going to lean into, we're going to talk about Brian Kelly in a second.
Yes.
We're going to talk about LSU. We're going to talk about the way fans and media and everyone outside might have not adjusted or caught up to the modern era yet and how we perceive these teams. So we have been trained for 25 plus years to have one war machine, right? Be it in Alabama, be it a 2019 LSU, pick a Cam Newton.
Georgia,
Auburn.
Yeah.
We got it. Yes. Ohio State, the peak Kirby teams were that who are basically the Philadelphia Eagles defense now. We don't have that anymore. We have tiers in the SEC. We have tiers. Now, we can get into a fun debate on where tier one ends and where tier two begins.
And we can have fun with homophones because we also have T-E-A-R-S in the SEC. But
that's
beautiful. Please.
Oh, God. And look at that copy editor's touch.
Let's do the T-E-I-R-S's now.
Before we get into the LSU game.
Or is it T-I-E-R, I before E? I don't know. I can't.
No,
I'm
Lord.
Going to give LSU the benefit of the doubt in this conversation because we'll get into the lagway of it all. LSU's defense is something else right now. So that's a tier one team that I'm separating from everyone else. Even with what happened at UTEP, and we don't need to spend a ton of time on
it. But is their offense? And we'll ask Brian Kelly that later.
We will. Then there's a group of tier one offenses and defenses that aren't as historically dominant as the SEC would expect. So that is probably Texas A&M, certainly Tennessee, certainly Georgia. Texas is still in this neighborhood.
Alabama?
Right. So tier two, Andy.
Yeah.
Another way of looking at this real fast. So Ole Miss wins another one possession game. All right. I know they've had quarterback injury issues, but that defense under Pete Golding is good, not as good as last year. Again.
Oh, no, it's not good. They got shredded by Arkansas.
That feels like yet another definition of like, okay, they've won two one possession games in against SEC games. All right, that's a tier two. That's a good tier two team,
right?
But Arkansas and Kentucky are winning those games, reversing one or two plays. We're not separating ourselves.
Yeah,
Auburn is living in tier two,
but Auburn and Oklahoma both look like they could be tier one, and they play each other.
Yes,
next week.
Oklahoma certainly.
Yeah, so
does.
We haven't shaken all this out yet.
How about the Go doors? Ahead. Where are the doors at in your fancy tiers?
You know what they are? You know what they are? The reason why we should all run the triple damn option. That's what
they're breaking on through to the other side. Is what they're doing. Remember how I said
they got a taunting penalty? I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt the show. Vanderbilt in the middle of basically a defensive blowout, and I know Sellers got hurt. Got a taunting penalty. Mm. Tell me things aren't different on West End Avenue.
Yeah, big time.
Unbelievable.
Pavia, man. Old Pavia. The offensive, we're seeing this a lot. I mean, we talked about it, I think, a few weeks ago. Like the old offensive coordinator, quarterback, transfer combo stuff. And it's just like, it's amazing.
You may be reading a column
Nashville.
About that for being on
amazing.
Three this week.
Okay. Amazing what it's done in Norman. Amazing what maybe it's doing in Salt Lake City. It's crazy.
So we have, to round it back up, Andy, we all felt good about tier one, and then we have a question mark tier if we don't know if they're high two, low one. And we've got about three or four teams. I think A&M is in that question mark area, Auburn, Oklahoma, and then who else did we say? Look, Vandy is a tier two team. They've played exceptionally
well. But
they're
going to beat a tier one team.
Absolutely. That's what happens.
Yeah.
That's the whole,
yeah.
This is the actual thing about it just means more every single week, da-da-da-da-da. It's not far and away we're going to have an elite contender, or it's really damn hard to separate these teams. And this is what is going to continue to fuel our business when it comes down to playoff time, is that there's just, look, on the scoreboard, in recruiting, in terms of evaluating stuff like defensive line or front sevens, when you just don't have a far and away Kirby Smart or Nick Saban defense. I think it starts there, guys. And then from the rest of it, all the other changes in the sport, we have every year like eight teams that sort of look the same. And it's going to be circumstantial which one ends up being the very best, unless you have that defense and that quarterback together. And I don't know if we have that this year.
I don't either.
I know it's early in the season, but like the whole conversation we're having about the SEC and how there's like, there are these 6-8, maybe even upwards of like 10 teams that are sort of still in this, we think are in this playoff sort of championship type of hunt. All of these conversations are why the SEC, I think internally within the coach and athletic director room, wants to expand the playoff. They know what's coming come December.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be four teams are going to be between number 10 and number like 16. And they're going to be left out, or at least one of
they feel like they can get them all into a 16 team when
they're the deepest league. And we've seen that now. I think they're 10 and 2. I just did the power conference, non-conference records or whatever. SEC's 10 and 2. Big 12 is 6 and 6. Big 10 is 5 and 5. ACC is 4 and 10.
If we continue to get second teams from either the ACC or the Big 12, no matter what the circumstance, situation, or context, that fifth SEC team is going to just scream like a scalded dog for 3 months.
Yep.
And I don't know if we necessarily reward the squeakiest wheel, because I still don't have a problem
ACC
with SMU.
The second ACC team may be a team that beat a good SEC team. So this year.
Yeah. Because we're going to talk about bees in a second, folks. And you better be ready, because
they're not an upset. Bees, they're hornets.
Hashtag bees on the internet. On the internet, they're just bees, baby.
We gotta talk about Brian Kelly, LSU, Billy Napier, Florida. This game had everything in the worst possible way, and a great, great explosion in the press conference afterward. If you love watching great explosions on your television, well, you actually should be watching us on the Yahoo Sports Network. So
perfect.
Yahoo Sports Network, available on all major FAST services. That is free ad-supported television, which means you turn on your smart TV. You see all those icons. One of those is the Yahoo Sports Network. You click that, and all of a sudden, Stephen Godfrey is smiling at you in his lovely sport coat. Ross is in his hotel room praying someone doesn't break in. I mean, imagine if you saw that on your 60-inch TV It's amazing. Or if you wanted to see it on your phone or your tablet 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, go to yahoosports.tv and you can watch our show. You can watch the Ariel Helwani show. You can watch Yahoo Sports Daily. You can watch the entire menu of Yahoo programming on the Yahoo Sports Network. Guys, we'll be right back with a great moment from Brian Kelly's post-game press conference. We're back with the College Sports Inquirer, and we head to Baton Rouge.
College Football Inquirer, Andy. We could do all sports. I guess we could do
well, listen, Ross, there's a gambling scandal in basketball. It's very heavy on my mind.
Yes, yeah.
I watched all those Fresno State and NCAA games. I don't know about you. I hope I'm not smearing NCAA. I think they were involved.
One of those schools.
Yeah. But we're back at the College Football Inquirer, and we're at LSU. Let's all put ourselves in this position because we've all been in this position before. Ross was an LSU beat writer, so he's been in this position a lot. We've all been in the post-game press conference after a game. So LSU wins a big game against Florida. The defense intercepts DJ Lagway 5 times, or you can say DJ Lagway threw 5 interceptions. However you want to couch it, LSU wins big game 20-10. Well, let's just hear the first question out of the chute to Brian Kelly. And his answer.
Brian in the back. I know you love these immediate post-game sessions, but what are you seeing with your offense?
Stop. Really? Is that the first question? We won the game 20-10. Try another question. What do you want me to tell you? I just laid it out for you. We played the game to win the game. We played the game to win the game.
All right, how about third down then? What is going on with third down?
One game. Last game, we were great on third down. You're looking at this from the wrong perspective. LSU won the football game. Won the game. I don't know what you want from me. What do you want? You want us to win 70-0 against Florida to keep you happy?
No, I think people want to know why you can't run the ball, quite honestly.
We can run the ball. Did you see the last play of the game? That's all you need. You just need one. There's a ridiculous questions. And I'm getting tired of it. That football team just worked their tail off to get an SEC win, and you want to know what's wrong. You know what? You're spoiled. You're spoiled. This team is 17-1 at night. 17-1. Give them some respect. How about that? Give them some respect instead of micro-analyzing every little thing. This is ridiculous. For a group of seasoned reporters, that kind of question is so out of line.
Coach Deshaun Spears, 2 interceptions tonight. It seems like he's worked into a role on
an important role. That's a great question. Thank you.
It seems like he's worked into a role on third downs in particular.
And you know why? Because he's been grinding. He's been grinding. Every single day he comes in, he's looking for an opportunity to get on the field.
Ross, you are a veteran of this beat. Is this a normal first question of the press conference kind of question on the LSU beat? Because these things do matter.
Specifically about offense? Yep. Right? I mean, I covered the Les Miles era. Of the Les Miles era. And it was like, that was it. That was always the topic after each game is, hey, we won. Our offense stinks. Why? And that was often, whether it was the first question or not, I don't know, but it was certainly a question often in the LSU press conferences, specifically under Les Miles. You go a few ways on this thing and how Brian Kelly reacted. I don't know that it's the best idea for a coach to demean and belittle reporters for 1 minute and 30 seconds. I also don't think it's the best idea to begin your question and answer segment of a press conference after a win in an SEC game with a question about, the worst part of the game.
Run the ball? Damn it.
Yeah.
The people need to know.
you mentioned it earlier. There is sort of a tact to approaching questions and building up to a certain question.
Layer them. Which,
right. Right. You've
Which is hard
up
because
there.
You may only get one question, and when they call on you is when they call on you.
And you may not have the right one prepped. So, Andy, you talked this out before the show. I want you to go through. You have kind of two theories here. One, wrong order, and two, wrong day. Can you explain that to the non-media public?
Yeah. So this question is actually a legitimate, valid question that should not have been asked out of the chute after an emotional win. That is a fifth question of this press conference question. If it's asked as question number five in this press conference, it probably gets a logical and reasoned answer. It's an even better Monday question. You ask that whenever you want to ask it on Monday. You're probably going to get a fairly introspective answer from Brian Kelly that probably does at least satisfy some of the curiosity of the fans that you are asking as a proxy for.
Okay. Well, why Monday, though, Andy? Is it because simply that Brian himself has had time to look at diagnostics, look at tape?
Also, he's changed modes.
Yeah.
Coaches immediately after wins are we won, we celebrate.
Yeah. Yeah.
By Monday, I have now diagnosed all the crap that went wrong, and I am yelling at my team all day today. So you feel free to ask something critical, because by God, I am in a critical mode.
The thing is, Andy, you mentioned it about a proxy for the fans and stuff. You know, I have obviously a lot of still connections in Baton Rouge. And what was the thing that all of them took away from that game? One thing. Why does our offense stink? That's what I heard from all of the fans. All the people down there that I still have a connection to is, we can't run the ball. We can't convert third downs. What's wrong with us? So to me, you know, a good columnist from that game is writing that story, right? Is trying to find that answer. And the only way to do it is to ask the coach. So I get the question on the day, maybe not the first question, but again,
you have to go when you're called. Michael Bonnet, the sports information director, he's saying you. And if that's when you're called, you're kind of stuck. See, I had a situation like when I was a Florida beat writer, I'm covering those basketball teams, and that second national title year in a row, Billy Donovan is flirting with the Orlando Magic. And it became a running joke that Andy asked the Magic question right out of the gate in every press conference.
Yeah.
Because it had to be asked.
Yeah.
So, it didn't matter what just happened. I had to ask it.
I watched some of this game. It was going on at the same time as the Texas A&M Notre Dame game, but I had it on my iPad and I was watching some of it. And so every time I looked up, like, LSU was either intercepting DJ Lagway or punting. Here are the stats. LSU, this is for LSU. 10 first downs, 4 of 14 on third downs, 316 total yards. It's very clear what the takeaway from the
Ferentz
game
smut novel
was. Yeah, yeah. There you go. I mean, imagine if DJ Lagway had thrown just 3 interceptions, Florida might have won the game. I don't know. But I will say this one more thing. Like Brian Kelly did make it clear in his answer, if you kind of listen, they played, he said multiple times, right? They played to win this specific game, sort of. And I think he was getting at, hey, this is the kind of game it was.
I agree with him
completely. We called that way. Right.
Yeah. On that strategy, when the other quarterback is throwing it to you every single time, when he's throwing it up for grabs every single time, and you have a 10-point lead, just don't do anything stupid. Which, by the way, Garrett Nussmeier still tried to compete with DJ Lagway, who had a much larger sample size, for dumbest interception of the night. Like, he did the thing DJ was doing by throwing it up. And that's, I guarantee you, that's when Brian Kelly truly told Joe Sloan, shut this shit down now.
Yes.
Because we are going to be as vanilla as possible and get out of here with a win.
It was in that mentality, an NFL finish. Right. Mm-hmm. You reduce variables down to who can control line of scrimmage to close a game out with a 2-possession lead. A couple things. I just realized I had multiple in-laws at that game last night. Haven't heard from them, Ross, as a sample set, which is a little concerning. But it is early yet.
Brian Kelly just shouting out the 51-yard run at the end as if that was. And that was. Did that double their rushing output for the night?
Basically, it did. Yeah.
Andy, we talked about this off air. It's very frustrating to wake up early on a Sunday morning and realize that you agree with and sympathize with Brian Kelly a little bit. It's hard to say that. Ross, you said, you know, a good column earlier, you said a good columnist or a good media member on the beat is going to highlight that offensive issue because it's somewhat systemic, which is a big word to use for 3 weeks of football. Mm. I think this is the disconnect, guys. I think BK, and this goes back to the increase in parity in this league that we are not used to yet. And I think this is kind of a running theme when we talk about the SEC specifically. What BK, and this is where, like, again, I can't believe I'm saying that I empathize with Brian Kelly. What his mindset on that podium, Andy, was we won. We were presented with a particular set of information, if you will, on how this game was going. We answered it correctly. We reduced down our variables. And we grind it. We would grind out a win. And that, if you listen to any NFL postgame, when it's 23-17 or 22-16, regardless if it's a 6-0 team beating a 1-5 team or a playoff team beating some team that's going to be top five in the draft, that's the any given Sunday aspect of the NFL. I need everyone listening who's not in a press box or in a coaching, you know, outside the industry. This is how it's going to be from now on.
In the SEC. Yeah.
Yes. I think Kelly is, in his not so lovable way, my God, trying to convey that it does not matter and style is not an issue. You are winning football games or you are losing football games. Mm.
And he's
LSU
right.
is a top 10 team. Yeah. Okay.
And he's right. The talent is more spread out than ever, right? The talent is more spread out than ever. We know we're going to have playoff teams that are going to be potentially at some point 8-4, who knows? There's certainly going to be 9-3. So you're going to have that. And I agree. It's a good point. I think Brian is right on that point.
Now, where he veers, it's interesting because he keeps talking. Like, I'm with him.
Yeah.
He could have bailed. While.
You're right.
You could have wrapped him it for up a after, while. You know,
30 seconds instead of 90.
And
but
then
Brian,
he goes,
but he's Brian Kelly.
He goes, what do you people want?
Yeah,
you're Brian Kelly. Spoiled.
He still couldn't not be Brian Kelly, which is a beautiful moment.
That's the emotion, Andy, that you talked about, probably.
Yes,
right? After a game.
I'm with him the whole way, and then he starts browbeating some TV reporter, and I'm just like, my guy.
God forbid, Brian,
you took a job.
Yes,
at a place where the previous three coaches had won national titles within their first 4 years. You are in year four. Yep. What do they expect? They expect you to win the freaking national title. That's what they expect, and that's why they're worried.
And the reason
you took
I liked
the job
him,
knowing that.
The reason I liked him in that moment, Andy, and we agreed on this, is that he was disarmed for a second, and I think he was 110%. Not only was he correct, he was genuine for a freaking hot second. Brian Kelly did not have that cold distance, that sort of sheen of the politician. He was not condescending, which is like his base setting. And for a second, you saw a fully realized human being who is an incredibly intelligent person in his field, struggles aside or criticisms in general. That's what people probably need more to see more of to get behind Brian Kelly in a bigger way. God forbid he be a fully fledged human being in front of that podium. But the problem was this. Then he got a little too fully fledged because he got in his feelings. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, there's the dick we know. Yeah.
I agree. I want more of that. I'll take it. I'll take the unfiltered version. I think that was. Plus, if I'm one of his players, and I hear that, I hear his response to that.
Yeah,
that endears him to me. That
in certain fans, probably certain fans who are, oh, I hate the media. The dang media is just no good and always trying to kill us and write bad stuff. I was in the elevator. Listen to this story. I was in the elevator taking it down with a bunch of Notre Dame fans, right? I get in the elevator. Yep. It's only me. I'm the only reporter in there because there was nobody else that could like fit in there, right? The elevator was full. And so I just barely got in. And as the door closes, somebody, you know, I hear somebody in the back of the elevator like, oh, yeah, that was like the media, you know, press box, were, you know, area. And this is a media member in here, like telling his wife or somebody else. And then he says, yeah, they're probably going to write a bunch of bad stuff about us after that game. We didn't play really that well, so maybe they should write some, you know, bad stuff. I mean, he was trying to, you know, he's just mumbling about it, and I'm just like, good Lord. He convinced himself in the end that, hey, you know what, maybe they should write bad stuff about us because we didn't play very well.
Well, what's interesting is I actually think non-LSU fans are going to be more apt to defend Kelly in this moment than LSU fans are, because LSU fans are going to say
the majority, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
We don't run the ball very well. We're not very good on third down.
His quotient of support is strange right now because I think he has a lot of the sidewalk alumni and he also has a lot of the country club. I think it's that in the middle that has a lot of anxiety about him. It's very different than Ed or Miles.
Brian Kelly's lost the suburbs?
Maybe. A little bit. Miles was a unifier. Ross, you know this, because really it didn't matter which way, shape, or form you were as an LSU fan. You were just sort of dumbstruck by his less Miles-ness. And then when usually the idiot math worked out and they found themselves with 10 or 11 wins, you were like, whatever. You know, we got here.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I'll say, just give a little insight into who that was, right? Who asked the question. Probably a lot of people out there are wondering. That was a longtime LSU beat writer who works at a local TV station there. His name is Michael Cobble. And I was just messaging with him last night, you know, a little bit about it. And I saw he's posted some things afterward on social media. One of them being what Andy has noted, what maybe that shouldn't have been the first question, basically, but it was a legitimate question, and everybody wants to know, you know, why the offense is struggling. And he's got a point on that, of course.
Yes, he does. To Andy's point, I'm going to try and come back around and try and get aggressive and get in on that second question, because if you lead with that, it's going to bomb. And if our job is to ask tough questions, but also to glean the information out of the public figure in this instance, I think the better move is to, whether it's me or someone else in that group, is to get the better information out of Kelly. It's a little bit, you got to kind of deal with his ego. I still think tactically, or you phrase it better. It's a generic question. Yeah. TV guys do a lot of that talk about thing because they need a 15 or 5 second audio clip. And we all came up as writers. We do a much longer sort of contextualized quote. That's what we're looking for.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm thinking about it, like, as if I'm in the press conference, right? The question to me is like, hey, how do you sort of rectify in your mind, we got this huge SEC win where our defense played incredibly well with what we saw in offense? You know, how would you evaluate it? And it's funny because if you go listen back, Cobble's question, there's not even, he doesn't even finish the question, right? Brian sort of interrupts him. So I don't know what the full question was exactly.
Can I ask a question? How bad's the offense, actually? Asking for our sake because Blake Baker continuing to impress and really looking good.
Yeah, the defense is so great.
Good. Yeah,
I actually think the offense is probably okay. Right. I think Florida may have a pretty good defense, and they had Caleb Banks back at least for most of that game, and then he went out in the fourth quarter. I think Florida's defense, we might find out, is pretty good. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's... I don't think it's as big a sin as everybody's concerned about, but we'll find out. I mean, Braylon Moore, their center, was playing on a bum ankle. Yo. I do think they can get better. We'll find out.
Their next three games, Andy, Sela, an Ole Miss defense that we just laughed at, a bye in Sela. South Carolina. Brian Kelly is going to have a you-know-what-eating grin every single time he looks at those team stats on the podium for the next month, because their offense will get better.
And by the way,
yeah.
This is also probably why the blow up happened last night. If you told any LSU fan you're going to start this season 3-0, if you told them that in July, they'd have been like, yep, we'll take it.
Yep.
Yes.
Done. No matter how it looks, circumstances,
we'll take it.
We'll take it.
Yeah. And it looks like they're going to be 6-0.
Yep. So, no, I think we've thoroughly digested that one.
Yeah.
We like
on the
Brian
other
Kelly.
Side,
let's
talk about quarterbacks. And let's talk about the other quarterback in that game to start that discussion. But we'll bounce around because there's basically all the quarterbacks we thought were going to be great, not so good. A lot of other people have emerged to take their place. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the College Football Inquirer, and this is the part where I apologize, and I have been apologizing on every show I've been on, whether it's my own show, whether it's somebody else's radio show. I will just be on an apology tour probably for the rest of the season, but especially this week. I am the idiot who had DJ Lagway as his number one quarterback in the country this offseason because I drank
the
Kool-Aid.
The one that threw five interceptions? That one?
Yeah, five. I was trying to remember if I've ever seen a quarterback throw five interceptions. I'm sure I have, and I'm sure I don't remember specifically. That's a lot of interceptions. I thought after interception number three, maybe it's an adjust the play calling type of situation. It's a sit him down and say, hey, maybe don't throw into triple coverage anymore. But Billy Napier and DJ Lagway, it was interesting after the fifth interception, when it was clear that LSU was going to win the game, Billy Napier and DJ Lagway had a moment on the sideline. The camera caught them talking, Billy Napier saying something to DJ Lagway, which I'm sure if we're being brutally honest and trying to guess what he actually said, was probably like, it's okay, dude. Keep working hard. It'll be fine. Knowing it won't. But what I really wanted to think he was saying is, you know, my buyout's $20 million. You've already got probably the $3 million that you were going to get this year because they're front loading all these NIL payments because of the way the rev share thing worked. We're going to be fine. I know that's not what he said. But guys, the preseason expectations versus the in-season reality, DJ Lagway, Arch Manning, who got booed by Texas fans against UTEP, Lenora Sellers, who got hurt and knocked out of the South Carolina Vandy game. But I got to be honest, if he'd continued playing, Diego Pavi and company were still going to win that game. It's a different world now.
Quarterbacks. Honorable mention, I guess, or dishonorable mention, Drew Aller's first eight drives, three field goals, a bunch of punts and interception against Villanova. This was not a good Penn State offense. And if you have, like, watch that offensive line, somebody's going to get home on them in a big way.
They play Oregon in 2 weeks.
The Phil Steele that I keep on my desk, the preseason Heisman in order, is Klubnik, Nussmeier, Manning, Lagway, Aller. I would rather talk about right now, if I was doing a segment on quarterbacks, Marcel Reed, Haynes King, Joey Aguilar, Luke Altmaier, Gunnar Stockton. Luke Altmaier hasn't played anybody
yet. Bo Prabula.
Pavia. Yeah, no kidding. Why do we always Diego forget Pavia. Missouri? It's been rough, not just for Arch, but for the entire group.
Jaron Chiave Sangapolitelli. I just wanted to say, I can say it now, guys.
Wow. That was really good, actually.
What was that?
I'm not even going to attempt that.
Jaron Chiave Sangapolitelli.
They got a big win over Minnesota. How about that?
Cal stayed up late enough. You saw the lefty from Hawaii throwing some beauties.
Yeah. Cal is undefeated because I knew that would happen.
Yeah.
I could frame a segment. And I can identify the problems. I cannot find a narrative through line for the struggles because I think the situations, what you said, Manning, Klubnik, Aller, Lagway, pretty distinct situations there. Like, I'm not necessarily, you know, going to compare Aller's struggles or sleepiness against a Villanova to what's going on at Florida. But for whatever reason, our top five-ish consensus quarterbacks in the media, damn that media again, that heinous media who did all this.
Well, they are idiots.
Struggling mightily. They are idiots. Yeah. Well, they don't vote well.
Why do we think this is? Do we have an?
That's what I'm. I can speak for myself
on the Lagway thing. It was a case of seeing him play his two best games back to back at the end of the season against some of the better competition he'd faced, where he was finally like, "I am the starter. I have to be the starter because Graham Mertz was hurt," and it was just extrapolating out. Oh, full off season. As the starter, build the offense around him. He'll get better because all the quarterbacks make a big leap from year one to year two. But that was what that was. And he was hurt all offseason. There are facets of his playing personality. I'm not going to, not his actual personality, but his on-field personality that should have been glaring red flags to me that weren't. And he is one who believes he can always throw his way out of the problem. And that is a massive, massive red flag. Because what happens when you have someone who can always throw his way out of the problem and they're in a close game against a good defense, they keep trying to throw their way out of the problem and they make the problem worse. And that's exactly what he did.
I'm early asking this question and I acknowledge it. But if we continue on this pace where those five quarterbacks do not finish even close to expectation From my financial standpoint in roster building, are we going to change our mentality on $4 million and $5 million quarterbacks? Are we going to spread that cash
probably
around
not.
And say,
well,
you know what?
Probably not.
I'm going to point not, back to something, but, yeah. something that you two said earlier that I said might be an on three column from me
yeah,
this week.
The combo.
Might be.
If we're going to spend that money.
Yeah.
The money should be for the combination coordinator quarterback. Like that is
so
that is what does it. John Mateer, Ben Arbuckle, they were a package deal. They made Oklahoma considerably better. We go back to last year. Tim Beck and Diego Pavia. Or as I say, Tim Beck, not that Tim Beck. Not the Tim Beck at Coastal Carolina who got shut out by East Carolina.
Yeah,
Tim Beck, who came from New Mexico State, who worked with Jerry Kill there.
Yeah.
Who is the Diego Pavia whisperer. I mean, this kind of goes back. Is the version of this Zach Kittley bringing Bailey Zappe from Houston Baptist to Western Kentucky?
Okay. I don't want to scream in the mic too much, but everybody gives me guff. I'm trying to think of a PG term for this online for mentioning these niche schools. And
which,
being
by
a
the
hipster.
Way, this spawned Ben Arbuckle.
Yes. And the Cam Ward thing. And we talked about, by the way, Eric Morris in North Texas. Holy my God. They look really good right now. They look they look top of the American good right now.
So if
and by the way, and Andy,
Eric Morris, who by the way got a quarterback and a coordinator combo.
Yes. And I was and got a defense and seven starters off of a defense last year at Sam Houston. Pulled seven starters up from Sam Houston and the coordinator. We are seeing a trend now that I guess what you're arguing, Andy, is that we're superseding elite free agent quarterback with combo. Let's import an offense. Let's cook it somewhere else. It's, you know, when they grow the grass and then outside and they slide it into like the dome in Arizona or Vegas. Mm-hmm. What is that? What we're talking about? It was a weird metaphor. It's early. Bear with me.
But that's what it is. That's exactly what it is. And so what was the biggest criticism of Billy Napier? What were the biggest questions in the offseason at Florida? Is he going to hire a play calling offensive coordinator? And here's where now, if you look at it, you kind of understand why he didn't. That's still going to get him fired, but you already had the quarterback. The coordinator wants to bring their quarterback.
Yeah.
Mm. The ones you want to bring their quarterback.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not like had he been forced to, by the way, Andy, you had a theme 3 weeks in a row that the most costly thing that happened in the 2024 season was actually Florida beating Ole Miss and LSU. I think what you're actually, the subtext of this is maybe he could have come back with one of those wins, but both of them gave him too much equity that he didn't know how to spin.
Too much power, exactly. The other part of this is, good example. There's so many examples this week. Darian Mensah leaves Tulane, goes to Duke, gets paid.
Yeah.
They went to Tulane. Duke went to Tulane yesterday and got annihilated. You know who's still at Tulane? Joe Craddock, the offensive coordinator who worked with Darian Mensah last year, who is
now doing just fine
with Jake Ratzlaff.
Yeah, Jake Ratzlaff, by the way, four rushing touchdowns. That offense is legit. That Ole Miss game next week is going to be really interesting.
Yeah, over 100 rushing yards for him. Yeah, that's a big game next week. And I mean, we can talk about it later this week. And John Summerall's got the green wave rolling. He seems to be in a position to pick whatever job he'd like on the cycle.
Buddy, it is the Summerall sweepstakes. Shout out to his representation.
Yeah.
Now, the jobs that are going to open up, probably not necessarily the ones now. It's early. But Auburn and Oklahoma, which we went into the season thinking, okay, one of these is opening.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Florida probably is. Virginia Tech probably is. UCLA probably is. And then we'll see.
He's not going to UCLA.
Of course not. He's not going. Right. He's not going to Virginia Tech either.
No,
I tell you right now, Virginia Tech cannot afford John Summerall. No. He'll stay at Tulane rather than go to Virginia Tech.
Virginia Tech's got some crossroads, like cripplingly depressing problems right now. UCLA, I think it's more about the fact that like Martin Jarman wants to stick with Deshaun. They're going to stick with Deshaun for the time being. There's not heat.
Deshaun's buyout drops to 60% of the remaining amount after December 1st. This is a very cash-strapped athletic department. Guys, they are probably going 0-12 or 1-11.
Yes.
The result of the Northwestern UCLA game in 2 weeks will probably reverberate. The answer to that.
It drops by 60% what it is now.
No, it drops to 60% of the remaining value.
What is it now?
I think what it's it, 75, but it's not much. No, it's 5.9 yeah. million right now. Like, if it's not quite into the world.
You know, yeah.
If you
yeah.
have, yeah, for UCLA, here's how it was phrased to me that I helped me understand. Of every school that was that aggressively sought out a new home in the last round of realignment real fast. So that's like Red River, the LA schools, the Pacific Northwest, et cetera, the schools that went over to the Big 12. Mm-hmm. UCLA seems the least interested in capitalizing upon that. That's what someone told me in relation to the
yes.
the torpor, if you will, amongst some very yeah. rich people in Brentwood and the yeah. athletic director.
The existential yeah. dread at Oklahoma of, oh God,
yeah.
we might not have been in position to take advantage of joining the SEC resulted in Ben Arbuckle and John Mateer getting imported correct. To Norman.
Yeah.
UCLA did not sit there and go, we're in the Big Ten. We need to make a splash.
Yeah.
They said, oh, our coach just left to be Ohio State's offensive coordinator. Let's hire as cheaply as possible.
Yes. Yeah. And they and yeah. and if it does drop and they make a move and there's someone like a Dan Mullen, it would make it would be better for them full stop immediately.
Dan Mullen to UCLA would be the most amazing thing because here's the deal. Between 2017 and 2018,
that's where you're going.
The Florida yeah. brass flies to New yeah. England to yeah. offer yeah. Chip Kelly the job.
Yeah. yeah.
He's got UCLA in one hand, Florida in the other. He wisely chooses UCLA because he would have been fired within 2 years at Florida because he didn't want to do the recruiting.
Oh man,
part
could
of
you
it.
Imagine? Yeah, sorry. Keep
so going. He
sorry.
Wisely chooses UCLA, which allows Florida. Well, it doesn't allow pushes Scott Strickland, Florida's AD, former Mississippi State AD, Mississippi mm-hmm. State alum, to go steal Dan Mullen from his alma mater, yeah. and so Dan Mullen comes to Florida. He gets fired for not really wanting to recruit at the level that Florida wants him to recruit, and he could wind up at UCLA where yeah, that's I perfectly okay that? As long as you win some games.
All comes there's, full circle.
There's a great evidence that college football has moved past its good old boyism when there's this many like insulting Northeastern Yankees as head coaches in like deep South places. Like they don't care which.
And when I said his alma mater, I was referring to Scott Strickland. Dan Mullen's alma mater is Ursinus
yeah.
College.
Yeah.
Chip Kelly hey, yeah. How about a little, in Gainesville.
How about a little around the horn? How about what happened in Morgantown?
They were down rod. 10.
Nico Martial gets 10. Yanked. Nico gets thrown back in and he becomes the hero.
A hero.
They
wow.
were
yeah.
10. Guys, and by the way, that was a pop pass on fourth down with time expiring. That was like unbelievable. You have to assume there was like some sort of divine luck shed back on Rich Rod after his last backyard brawl
yeah,
but, to come
yeah.
back in that way
come
at that
back
time.
And storm back. He told me in the in August or no, over the summer, I think he said it maybe at his media day, maybe at ACC or Big 12 media day, is that he would burn a couch if they beat Pitt. And then he told me in August yeah. when I visited there that the fire marshal actually called him, was like, Coach,
please
you
got to
apologize because that's against the law now here. Since you wow. were here, we actually passed a law where you can't burn couches.
I think so. Last night was like the purge in Morgantown. Maybe. I think the
well,
laws
funny
were lifted.
There's also a couch in his office. You know that he hasn't redone his office. That mm-hmm. that's not a priority for him. So it's from Neil Brown's furniture.
So he could burn Neil
he
Brown's
really,
couch.
Well, he doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't really like the couch in there. So he did say to me, "See
he doesn't
that couch?
Love it.
I would burn that couch. I'd burn that couch." And hey, we got to get to what the hell happened in Atlanta, Brent Key. And the boys of the bees,
yeah,
right?
Dude.
Buzzing away.
Hey, that's not an upset. I know we're short on time.
It's definitely not
Tuesday.
An upset.
I'm tired.
Yeah,
stop,
yeah.
stop calling
yeah.
it an upset.
No,
you should. Yeah. Everyone in America should know what that program is capable of right now and how well they do what they do well.
I want to give everybody some homework.
Okay.
While we mentioned Georgia Tech beating Clemson,
yeah,
go look at Georgia Tech's remaining schedule.
Yes, sir.
Tell me that's not a playoff team. Tell me that's not a team that can play for the ACC championship. There is a very reasonable possibility that Georgia Tech goes 8-0 in ACC play and rolls into clean old-fashioned hate, which they sold to Mercedes-Benz Stadium, unfortunately.
Yep. Oh,
but that's fine. But rolls into that game 11-0. And they played a classic against Georgia last year in Athens, that 8 overtime game.
Should have won. Yeah, I mean, outplayed them.
It's my game of the year.
Yeah.
Yep.
We could see that. I mean, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves because obviously it's hard to go undefeated in conference play. I don't care what conference you're playing in. I don't care how easy your draw is. But Georgia Tech got the best draw possible for this, except Clemson, which now they've already beaten.
Yeah.
No Miami, no Louisville, no SMU.
Before, Before we go real fast, shout out to Delaware. First win over an FBS Blue program. Hens. As an FBS program, second week in a row, Jim Mora blows it in overtime.
Oh, yeah.
Shout out to them Huskies.
Wow. What a week. Next week's going to be just as good, guys. We got some incredible games. We got Indiana, Illinois for pecking order placement in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. We got Auburn and Oklahoma. Jackson Arnold returns to Norman. Mm. That's the subplot bowl. Even if it's not a hot seat bowl, it's not a loser leaves town match between the coaches. But it's the subplot bowl.
Sounds like this a crypto sponsored December 22nd game.
Exactly.
Played in a cold weather NFL stadium.
This is going to be so much fun. And we will talk to you again on Tuesday.